So, as most of you know, so inflation is a period of almost exponential accelerated expansion of the universe, and is usually triggered by a scalar field, which slowly rolls down its potential. So during this slow roll, the value of the potential of the scalar field is almost constant due to Hartree friction. The field is stuck at some region of its potential, and during this inflationary period, the Hartree scale is proportional, is related to this value where the field has been stuck, and is approximately constant. So you have exponential expansion, period of exponential expansion of your space-time, of the universe, during which the Comovic Hubble length decreases with time, and this helps to solve the flatness, the horizon problem, and also dilute any monopoles which are present in your theory. Furthermore, it predicts scale-invariant spectrum of perturbations, and also Gaussian spectrum of perturbation, almost scale-invariant. And furthermore, the quantum fluctuations of this inflaton provide the seeds of structure formation, so it gives somehow a link between quantum physics and macroscopic physics. This inflation scenario is a inflation scenario is consistent with what we see in the sky. So this is a map took it from W Map collaboration. It's a mapping of the anisotropies of the CMB observed, and two basic quantities that we will know later on in my talk. Two basic numbers, present numbers, are the following: is the amplitude of initial perturbations, which were measured by orbits about 10 to the minus 5, and also the value of the spectral index of these perturbations. It's about 0.96. This is with some priors, for example, that there is no random special index, but I will take this value to fit what I will discuss later. So the question then is, which model of inflation should we choose? So there is a wealth of inflation models, like Megacertis, Spires, and I found that there are more than 3,000 papers whose title includes the name inflation. And there are two points of view that we can choose. The first is the phenomenological approach, that we find the simplest possible model with which we can fit what we observe in the sky. And the second approach would be to take some theoretical construction, well-motivated theoretical construction, and see how they fit with observations, and also if they give something special, some special prediction of the theory that we can test also. I will follow the second approach, and I will be interested in embedding an inflation scenario in a more fundamental high-dimensional theory. What would it be? Would be either string theory or M theory or any other theory with dimensions more than 4, which could be string quantification or high-dimensional like supergravity theory. So how can we realize inflation in such kind of theories? One way is to use brains, which are objects, dynamical hypersurfaces, which live in this high-dimensional bulk of these theories. And we can use them to realize what the so-called brain inflation scenario. So in this case, the inflaton, so if you have a theory with more than one brains floating in the bulk, and the distance, the relative distance is phi, you can imagine that the inflaton is the field corresponding to this distance phi. And when two brains are well separated, the force between them is weak, and so the potential for this field phi will have a small slope, so it could give rise to slower inflation. When they approach each other, these two brains, then this force becomes stronger, so the potential is steeper, so the inflation will end, and at the end, with the collision of the two brains, so if we assume that the southern model fields live in one of these brains, this collision will reheat the southern model fields. I think the initial idea was that
you're right, you don't have to live.
So that was what I was going to say, is that this potential for the inflaton phi, the integrate distance, is in principle calculable given a certain high dimensional theory. So given a high dimensional theory, you can make some prediction about the inflation. Yes.
Is it obvious that it's calculable iteratively? Yeah, that's what people would do. Is there some general reason that you think this thing is calculable?
I think that was objectionable to Valakai. There was no papers on it after 1998 until 2001, because basically the problem was that their picture was these things were basically BPS, so they had no potential at all, and so it'd be some non-perturbative thing that was very symmetry, so you couldn't calculate the tension. So it was the brain anti-brain thing is what made it calculable.
It's a brain anti-brain.
Yeah, it's just like it's a little bit. Yeah, it's a close world thing. But then the problem is that you can never make them far enough away that the force is weak, because there's two papers on the subject at the same time, one of which says what you said, that you can make them far enough away. But if you actually look at the limit of how far away they can be is the size of the space. And if you look at that, the slow-roll parameters are always never small, because you can never get them far enough away. So the trick is then to make the force, the calculable force, weak enough.
If it's not interpretive, it just can't be dealt with.
Typically, you need something out there, because there's a lot of no-goal theorems for the semi-classical.
So do people seriously do not interpretive analyses of this? Or it's just, it's not like any formulated Wilsonian it's just
people do it in the Wilsonian, the close to supersymmetric solution, they do Wilsonian. And they often do have an interpretive contribution, which is important.
Anyway, here, I mean, that. What I wish to do with this slide is just to present a general idea of how this brain inflation narrative works. Now it works at the end, it's a different story. But the scenario is like that. And well, in string theory, the state of the art, let's say, of that kind of brain inflation scenario was the KKLT model so have type of distinct theories in 10 dimensions, you can magnify each of them in a Kolobi-Young manifold, and then you add lots of fluxes of magnetic fields to stabilize the moduli, and also you add some brains working this internal space to help do the same thing. And in this space, there is a region which is highly warped. So if the 10-dimensional metric splits in 4D plus 6D, okay, there is a function multiplying the 4D metric, which depends on the sum of the radii of the Calabi-Yau manifold. And in this direction, the warping is rather high. So by putting some brain moving towards another brain, actually a brain and anti-brain, in this setup, and then this interbrain distance phi would be the inflaton. And I don't want to go into details of this modeling, just to mention that you have to say that a prediction of this model would be the production of cosmic strings, which could be detected from gravity waves or also visible in the CMB polarization. So what I'm going to discuss about is a scenario of brain inflation, which is much, much simpler than this 10-dimensional thing. Okay, it will be based, so it will be 6-dimensional model in which I will embed some brains moving, which will provide me of some inflation scenario. So I will use 6-dimensional gauged supergravity. And so this gauge supergravity was studied by Salam and Seskin. The field content of this supergravity is rather simple. So it has graviton, a gauge field, U1 gauge field, a dilaton, and an anti-symmetric field, form field. And the fermionic content is the gravitino, the dilatino, and the gaugeino lambda. Most of these fields I will not consider in my presentation because I will be interested only in the bosonic sector of this theory, and in particular I will set this anti-symmetric field B to zero. So the action of this system is the following, and what is important here to say is that the coupling of the dilaton to the gauge field and also the potential of the dilaton.
Finally, the scoop of the hockey stick is used. That's the first time.
So these are dictated by n equals 2 supersymmetry. So here, G is the gauge coupling of the field A mu, and also M6 is the 6-dimensional fundamental scale. So what kind of solutions do we take from this theory? So if we turn on gauge flux in the internal two-dimensional space, so if we said that f mu nu is some flux number q, epsilon mu nu, then the internal space, two-dimensional space, spontaneously compactified. It's compactified actually to a sphere whose radius is related to the value of the gauge coupling. The 6-dimensional supergravity. So this was a vacuum found in by Salam and Seskin in 1984. But for the purposes that I want to use later for realizing inflation in such kind of background, I need a little bit of warping in the 4-dimensional space. So instead of having only a Minkowski symmetric, I would like also a function of some coordinates in the internal space, and so I need a bit of deformation of this solution to something like this, to having a warp factor in front of the Minkowski metric, and also a little bit deformed internal space to something like this. Not exactly a sphere, but it resembles, let's say, an onion. Okay. So actually, this kind of solution has been found by Gibbons, Kuven, and Hope in 2003. So, at the end points here of this compactification, the end points are singular. So, they need to be sourced by sources, some sources which are of dimension 2, and we need to add them in the action. So, these are the actions of dimension 2 brains that we can add. But furthermore, in order to preserve the maximum amount of supersymmetry at the action level that we can, we should add some magnetic couplings of the gauge field to the these 2-dimensional 2 brains. And this technically is possible if we substitute the gauge field strength F mu nu in the internal space with an F mu nu hat, which has this extra term, which is localized at the positions of these codimension 2 brains, and it It is related to the tension of this codimension two brains and also the gauge coupling gene. It's something that we found last year with Yon Min.
So, I'm sorry, that was an ignorant comment, but, or a question. You do this, you say, I'd like to preserve Susie.
Yes,
what does the brain need to source for that to happen? Is that the question you want?
So, if you just have add these actions for the codimension 2 brains, then this brain also persistently is okay with your action. So, you can ask yourself, can I modify my theory in such a way that I can have some amount of supersymmetry to be preserved?
So basically what you're doing is you're giving the brain some charge.
Yes, and the charge of the brain is this D over G. Okay.
Is that necessary for the inflation? Is that something which we're talking about?
It's necessary, I will explain in the following slide. Is that okay? I'll give you 1 minute. Okay. So this was the Gibbs Hawk. We add this codimension two brains at the singular points of this solution, and say the tension of the second brain is related to the tension of the first brain, and also the ratio of the flux that we have in the internal space divided by the gauge coupling, and this ratio here of Q over G modulates the warping. So if it is specific for a specific value of this this ratio of Q over G, you take the unwarped Salam-Seskin vacuum, and but if you are away from that value, then you get this onion-like compactifications.
My question about the supersymmetry thing. I know what's going to really happen is that F hat squared is in the bulk action, and so then the F delta function term is like an F coupling to the brain. Then you have the delta function squared term. Is it really important that you were thinking of it this way, or could you have just thought of it just a magnetic coupling to the brain and not thought of it as being a perfect square?
I think that these delta squared terms, they are important.
So you can, it could be a delta of zero, so delta squared.
Yeah.
It's a very type of.
Right.
But you could imagine that there is some auxiliary coupling to the gauge field. And after you make out the gauge field, you can imagine the coupling of the auxiliary field to the brain. After you take out the auxiliary field, you will end up with this single case. So that actually, there is the onshell. There is a global study equivalent of such kind specification. So,
and that would cancel this. Is that the idea that it's an auxiliary field is canceling?
I mean, you can start with the regular action without delta zero. Then after integrating out some auxiliary.
From the variation of from the Susie action, you need that kind of delta square terms to cancel other terms. So
is the statement that it gets worse than this delta square term, or that all delta square terms cancel, and so that at the end of the day you don't have to worry about delta square terms? I agree that the auxiliary fields could give you the delta square term, but I wasn't sure if the argument was that those will then cancel this one. Or is the argument that those ones are also something to worry about?
Are you saying that this comes from this? The way to think of this is that some auxiliary field has been integrated out and gave you this?
Yes. And then in the beginning, you don't have synchronous power. But after the regional eliminating the auxiliary field, you will become something.
So then you're saying that those terms really are there, and so when you do inflation, you have to deal with them at some level because of the part of potential. So will that be part of the story? In practice, what do you actually do?
In practice, it will not contribute to what I'm going to discuss later. So just the only contribution is that we can find some background which is n equals 1 supersymmetric. Okay. And we are close to this background. I will explain the next slide. So.
Is T1 arbitrary here? Is this a new parameter?
Yes, it's T is arbitrary. It's source. So T1 is arbitrary. T2 is related to T1. So for a general T1, and for general, for general G over Q, okay, for general warping sense, we can actually see that all supersymmetry is broken by this background solution. Okay. But for specific values of this warping, as I said before, we can arrange to have n equals 1 supersymmetry preserved. So had we not added this magnetic coupling to the braids, okay, here we would even for the symmetric this symmetric compactification would have n equals 0. Okay. Thus by adding this magnetic coupling, then we can arrange have a supersymmetric. So we can have one remaining supersymmetry by this background. Okay, and in this background, the two the tensions of two brains are equal, and there is no warping in the four-dimensional space. So, in what I will discuss later, I want to be in a situation where I have some warping. Because I need the warping for inflation later, but this warping will be weak enough so that I am close to the supersymmetric value.
I guess I still don't understand is why supersymmetry is important. What's the supersymmetry? What ultimately?
Because I will need this warping I said to be very small. So a dynamical say argument that I can think of that why this warping should be small is that I'm close to a point of enhanced symmetry, and this would be the point of enhanced symmetry, a vacuum which is supersymmetric.
But if I just, since warping is something I can just dial in any of the non-supersymmetric solutions, if I was happy to dial that to be small, then you would not do supersymmetry, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Just
the dynamical argument. Okay, that why should I have very small warping is that I'm very close to an enhanced symmetry. So this compactification, with or without warping, has a scaling symmetry. Okay, so the metric can be rescaled by e to the say constant phi zero, plus, and the dilaton can be shifted by phi zero and still obtain a solution of the equations of motion of the same type. So this means that there exists a modulus theory corresponding to the freedom of choosing this shift constant phi zero, and which needs to be fixed. Otherwise, it will interfere with what I will discuss later about the inflow dynamics. So we need that this modulus 1 square is supposed. There is a modulus one square, and this is possible. We should think of some stabilization mechanism which doesn't change much the background solutions and solution. So I don't know if there are many ways to use that stabilization mechanism, but at least one has been provided in the literature is to stabilize this internal space. Via the regularization of this background conical braids. Okay, and so by cutting this compactification at some point, so cutting out the conical singularity at some point and substituting it with appropriate caps and also pasting these caps to the compactification with the rings, then it is possible to achieve stabilization of this internal space. So how, in more details, how this is possible is that adding some brain actions, okay, on these rings, which include some coupling of this rings to the dilaton, and also by adding some Gaussian-like field action with a different potential U potential coupling to the dilaton, then it is possible to stabilize the remaining modules of the system. So in our paper, let me make a comment. In our paper, we assume that somehow this the radius of these rings is fixed by some higher energy dynamics independently of the modulus, and so we could take a stabilization mechanism which in which the bulk solution is exactly what we would take for the bulk solution with conical grains. However, recently in this paper, there has been shown that the modulus stability, so the modulus mass and also the ring brain radii are related. So so we are it's another dependent context, and so we should take this into account, and this will forbid the bulk solution to be exactly of the conical type that I discussed before. Should be slightly a bulk solution, slightly which gives some non-conical limit when you take the ring radii going to zero radii, so to zero size.
So the modulus that you showed, is it, what does it correspond to geometrically? Is it
radius? So the modulus is exactly the, is the breathing mode of this modification. So so it will correspond to this shift symmetry here of the metric. Okay.
But like, does it correspond to like the radius of or some kind of distance on the?
What's the geometric meaning of the module?
Yeah.
The whole line.
The whole point. The point. If you wish. So, for the following, I will assume that this deviation from the bulk solution that we need to achieve modulus stabilization from the conical limit is small.
And okay. So it would mean that if it didn't preserve that limit, then it wouldn't be like a proper way to regularize the.
It means that okay, if I had taken here in the bulk the solution which has a conical limit, an exact common conical limit, then I would not be able to stabilize the modulus. Okay, so I need a slight deviation from so in the limit to be slightly non-conical. Okay, the bulk solution to be slightly non-conical limit.
So
however,
well, so it's like the reason there's a flat direction is that the bulk equations have a classical scale inference. So then the issue is those caps, you think those were just regularizing the brain there. And then the issue is if the brain couplings to the bulk field preserve that scale inference, the bulk has a flat direction. But if they break it, then you have to keep it. And it turns out that the requirement that you break the scale inference, so the flat direction implies that it forbids there being just kind of some there. So if you choose a conical singularity, then you necessarily have to have chosen the brain to be scale invariant, so you would not have looked at the plot.
So, okay, in our paper, we neglected this finding here of this recent finding, and we assumed that somehow this ring radii as in, are independently fixed by some other dynamics at some constant value. So they're not they don't depend on the module. Okay, and then in that way we used a solution for the background model in the bulk, which has a conical limit. But given that recent paper, what one should do is to deviate a little bit from the conical limit, so that because the ring radii are related to the modulus. But we think that this change in the bulk solution will not really affect our results. So we have an argument for how. I can say later. So, given now that we have given this background solution, and given that we stabilize the model use of this background solution, I would like to add broad brains with which we realize the inflation, brain inflation scenario. And when I say probe brains, I mean that there is no significant back reaction of them to the background geometry. And in this quantification, there are two kinds of possible brains that we can add, codimension 2 or codimension 1. So a codimension 2 inflation scenario would look like this. So our codimension 2 brain, probe brain, would start at some position moving in the bulk, moving towards one of the background brains. So the interbrain distance of, between the probe brain and one of the background brains will be the inflaton. And then inflation will go on as the brain moves, and we'll end with the collision of this probe brain to the background brain. So with codimension one brains, we can think that there are kind of rings floating in the internal space, and again they approach the background brain, and inflation ends when hitting the background brain. So if the radii of this dimension one brain is small enough, then you can expect that the dynamics of that kind of models, okay, will be exactly the same as the dynamics of the codimension 2. Yes.
Why would you expect it to be stably circular?
This.
Yeah.
The probe brain.
Yeah. Why wouldn't it just if it has tension, it should just.
Yes. Well, I don't know.
Can it be circular singularity? Can it encircle the singularity? You've drawn it so that it can't shrink to zero, but if it encircles the singularity, it should really.
Yeah,
the ring is not.
What?
The ring at the right hand end.
Yeah,
it's a probe brain to circle. Then it could be going around the ring at the right hand end. It can't shrink.
Yes, that's the second case.
Mind meld, you guys get that. So, what the typical thing to do is you just take a scalar field on the brain and you give it a line, you make a line around the brain, so it's not periodic.
So it has to be a street.
And that resists, and then you can make a balance.
So that's the second scenario of a codimension one brain, say, a portion that you can imagine this compactification. So this brain circles the compactification. Hits the other background brain. Well, I will not speak about this kind of scenario. I will be mostly interested in codimension 2 brain moving, or in this picture, a codimension 1 brain which has a very small radius. So what makes this radius small and stable? It's something that we will address.
The way you've drawn the pictures there, it kind of implies that the curvature of this surface is negative in some places and positive in others. Is that the way it is? Does curvature vary from Einstein? I mean, near the neck of the right-hand side, it looks as though the curvature is negative because you look one direction away. But the way it's drawn is an embedding, it looks as though the curvature is negative.
Yes, absolutely.
An artifact of the way it's drawn, or if that's actually
doable. So,
there's a limit which it could be almost a sphere. When you trip it away from spheres, and then it's all positive. So if you try to make something negative, it doesn't have to be.
Okay. It's just an
artifact. Yeah, I think it's right. Because the Roman balls are positive.
They will all be positive, yeah.
Yes.
Not from the light.
Okay, perhaps it happened.
From the light, the way it's drawn, it looks negative.
Yeah.
But you said it was close to a sphere. In the case of interest.
Yes. So when the warping here is smaller, then you would have something like a rugby ball.
Yeah.
It probably will all be positive
and rolling.
Yeah.
That's probably correlated with the sign of the tension of the brain. It's probably true that being coming in positively, like a rugby ball, is related to being positive tension in the cap.
Okay. So those pictures are drawn, it looks as though the tension is negative.
Yeah, something you expected here.
Yeah.
somehow have negative leverage. I don't know.
And what's the importance? Again, the distance?
So, yes, the inflaton will be exactly the interbrain distance between this probe brain and the background brain.
This
and
curve, so, this curve is for the change of the water, the coverage, not the change of the 2D coverage. So, it could measure internal coverage, it's always positive.
It's always positive.
To be two dimensional coverage. But this draws the change of the wall factor. Wall factor can change in coverage, changing sign of the coverage, sign of the wall factor.
The wall factor can change the overall Ricci curvature of the entire space. Sorry, I was just talking about Ricci curvature of this two-dimensional surface.
He's saying this surface, this isn't supposed to show the Ricci surface, but it's supposed to be a representation of the wall.
Well, in fact, I was opposed to the internal space, okay, not the wall factor. Okay, maybe my drawing here is okay. I should have less of an onion that it really is, but okay, fine. The goal there was here is to add this probe brain and how are we going to describe the effects of the contribution of this probe brain to the effective four dimensional theory. So that's how we're going to discuss about inflation, the inflation, calculate the inflation potential effective theory. So, in order to do that, we add.
Do you imagine the standard models on the brain? Does it matter?
So, my intuition, okay, from the introduction was to put the standard model brain in one of these background brains. So, this moving brain collides, okay, with our standard model brain and reheats. Okay, so that's how I would like to think about it, that we live in one of these background brains. So I was saying that the contribution of this background brain to the four-dimensional effective theory would be given by the DBI action. So the DBI action is just the square root of the induced metric. So the induced metric will on this probe brain will be given by the explicit solution of the background brain. Geometry that we have, and also will depend on the embedding of this probe brain in the background geometry. So this embedding, I will choose it to be like this. So the x mu directions to be the same as the x mu directions of the background geometry. R would be the radial position of this probe brain, which will depend on time, it will be the inflaton in our case. And I would assume that the angular direction of this probe brain is constant during its motion. In general, this is not doesn't need to be true. In general, you can have spiral motions of this probe brain in this internal space, but for the purpose of this talk, suppose that this angular direction is constant, theta c is constant. So computing the induced metric on the probe brain, so in the 0-0 component of the induced metric, there comes the time derivative of the inflaton field. So if I put this back to the DBI action, this is how I could get the description of the inflaton field in the four-dimensional field through this substitution. Okay. So expanding this DBI action, then I will get also a potential term for this inflaton. So at the end, my four-dimensional effective theory, by integrating out all the heavy modes modes will look like this. It will be four-dimensional gravity plus this modulus that we have stabilized. And then it will acquire new pieces through for small enough velocities. We can expand the square root of the dBi action and obtain a kinetic term with a coefficient that has to do with the background model solution, and a potential which has to do with the warping of the internal space, which is given by this function here. It's dictated by the background solution and depends on the ratios, as I said before, of Q over G, the flux over the gauge coupling. Here, R0 is the is given as is given by the gauge coupling, G, and so R0 is the mean internal space radius, the compactification scale. So basically, we will study this effective action. And so if the modulus stabilization scale is high enough, and so we can fix psi at scale where it doesn't interfere with the R dynamics, okay, then the inflaton potential will look like this. Okay, so so for small enough warping, it will have a small, small variation, and the height of this potential will be given by the tension of the probe rate E3. So the slow roll parameters have this form, and what is important here is that they are proportional to this parameter delta, which says which is a measure of how warped the space is. So I told you before that the a measure of the warping is Q over G. Okay, so you can see that for small, very small delta, much smaller than one, we are at a situation where we have a almost symmetric compactification. Okay, we are very close to the supersymmetric part. For delta, much different than much more, much bigger than one, we are in a highly warped case. Okay. So.
So do you have initial conditions that are here at all? It doesn't matter where you start. You
know. Yes, it matters. So as I said, I will say a bit later in the next slide is that you should start inflation at the point before this inflection point of the potential.
So is, I mean, is it basically you said to start in the middle, which you balance, but two different frames?
Sorry?
I mean, physically speaking, are you basically trying to stay right at the middle? But there's no, where there's a small network and you're basically you barely pulled towards one because you're being balanced. Of course, it's balanced, but at two different frames.
You want a very small warping, okay, for perhaps slower parameters, much smaller than one. And furthermore, to start at a point which is before the inflection point.
I don't understand, but I mean, physically speaking, if the warping went to zero,
yes,
then
the potential would be flat.
It would be completely flat.
Yes.
And so the picture there would be that you would be equally attracted by both sides and you wouldn't have to move. Is that right? I just want to understand.
Potential, then you will stay there forever. You don't roll.
No, no, I understand. I just wanted to make sure I actually was following.
So yeah.
I'm happy. I understand.
I remember in a maybe this is a previous iteration, but there was a self consistency issue in the program approximation, right? That the condition that the warp factor be sufficiently small to make this slow roll parameter small was that the difference in the tensions between the two.
Yeah, we mentioned it later.
Oh, no, you got the question. But the upshot is that you got around that, or is that a problem also for this?
We think we got around with that.
Okay.
By comparing with some multi-grain solutions that Jeremy had found some years ago with Yuki. All
right.
Good day. So we try to compare now this model with these numbers, two numbers that I mentioned at the beginning, the amplitude of the fluctuations.
This is for the model that has that issue, right? Before you've got the three brains. So the thing that gets around that self-consistency issue is one where you're not making it consistency issue was that if you made the work factor small enough to get inflation, then the potential you were keeping was smaller than the back reaction that you neglected. And so
yeah.
So now the way that you get around that you said was that you would actually include the back reaction of the propane.
Yeah. So in some sense we could find multi-grain solutions. But these do not destabilize the working.
But these predictions on this slide are all from the one that has this consistency issue.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So you can give us a better one.
So yes, I go on with discussing this kind of potential ignoring any other back reaction issues, and then I will return to them to see. So by fitting with these two numbers, W the fluctuations and the spectral index, we see that the following should hold. So the compactification scale should be about 13 GeV, but the metal scale should be about 2 orders of magnitude higher. And the tension of the brain should be 10 to the 16 GeV times this warping parameter delta, okay, to the power 4. Furthermore, so in order to fit this number, then the eta, the horizon exit, should be smaller than 0.02, and so small should be also the epsilon. And with these numbers, we obtain some number of ifolds, which can be larger than 60. So it's something that, so we can cook something which is acceptable.
What was the range of your R coordinate?
The range of my R coordinate. So, in the gauge that we have here, R coordinate goes from 0 to infinity, but the proper distance is fine.
Yeah.
So, so in this scenario, we need, in order to have this NS to be 0.96, to start at the point which is before the inflection point. Okay, we don't need to fine tune it really because we have also the this parameter R0, T3 to play with. So it needs to be a little bit before this inflection point and it should stop after the inflection point at some. So other observer that we checked was the ratio of the tensor modes to scalar modes. Which is again proportional to delta. So in principle, you get negligible gravitational waves. And also the running of the spectral index, which turned out to be again small. So a prediction of this scenario would be that exactly that we have a negligible gravitational wave. So if some gravitational waves are detected in the near future, this would rule out computing this scenario. So how do we exit? Well, we have an idea of how this could look like, and I mean we got that intuition from so this string motivated models that I discussed in the introduction is that close to the point of collision, other degrees of freedom starting playing some important role. So we can imagine how this could work by altering this this scenario to a hybrid-like scenario, where during inflation there is an extra field which is somehow stabilized during all this motion, but here close to the collision point acquires this shape, this potential acquires this shape, which. First of all, it brings the vacuum energy at an acceptable level, and also the oscillation of the chi field around this minimum is able to reheat the southern model fields, which live on this background frame here. So I don't have more to say about the exit of inflation. This is just how we could imagine the exit. It's something. It's not calculable, actually, in the specific theory that we discussed. It's something that seems inspired from the string models.
Nobody calculates it, though.
Well, had some idea how to...
Yeah, but they were at the same level.
Anyway, so I want to discuss some Babrie-Axel issues now. And the first one is about the DBI approximation there. There's a dangerous point because if we think of this codimension two brains, okay, that conical codimension two brains and non-conical codimension two brains. So the conical brains, conical codimension two brains, have this property to hide vacuum energy. So if you take flat space and you add codimension two source at some point, then you can find solutions where there is no curvature induced, neither in its warp volume nor in the extra two dimensional space. Okay, but instead there is just a warp factor, deficitantly induced in this extra two dimensional space, which is related to the source T that you add at this point. So by adding a source, adding some tension, okay, at some point on this codimension two brains, we have no effect on the curvature of this brain. So this goes against what we would like to do with inflation, because it's exactly the tension T3 which drives inflation in this scenario. So we would like to be in a case where the codimension two brain that we consider the probe brain is slightly non-conical, so that its tension plays a role in the effective dynamics. So that's what we did a small calculation with Yun Min with slightly non-conical brains. If lambda here measures the deviation of the from the conical limit, so you can imagine lambda as being a dilaton coupling of this slightly non-conical probe brain, which deviates from the scale invariant coupling, okay, that a conical brain would have. So then the effective probe brain potential has this form, depends on this lambda. So lambda equals zero is the exact conical limit. And at lambda equals zero, you see that there is no contribution to the effective. The effective potential is exactly zero, something that we would expect for exactly conical brains. And for lambda, non-zero, we get exactly the same form for the form of the effective potential, plus some corrections, small corrections, which are proportional to the deviation of the conical case. And here, the product of the tension of this non-conical brain times lambda is something that in the previous slides we used as T3, so it's something like an effective T3. Yes?
So this is, sorry, some other coupling that the brain has other than just the regular gravitational coupling?
So we have a dilaton in the system, okay, which in principle can copy to the codimension two brain.
So this is like
a. For a conical brain, there should be no gap.
No, so by conical brain, you just mean a codimension two source in a 3D. Just a codimension two source, which always generates a conical defect.
Yes.
No.
No, it's not only.
What's conical
defect?
Conical means absence of conical delta.
Okay, conical.
So if it's just pure gravity, it would be conical, but if you couple the delta, that's stress energy because the delta is still
okay.
Conical means that
okay,
the structure of the singularity is purely distributional. Okay, it's just a delta function.
So anyway, so the as you take the tension of the brain up and down, the question is, do you change radii or do you just change the cones defect? Right, because that's the question. If it's a purely conical case, then you just change the size of the cone as you move up and down.
If you have non-conical codimension two brain, then you also have the camera sort of blowing that close to the brain.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the distinction between conical and non-conical potential.
Right. Fantastic. I've heard this in movie talks sometimes.
So this is the one point back reaction that I wanted to stress. The second is the back reaction of the probe brain on the modulus, and in order not to have some back reaction to this stabilization mechanism if you want to use, then the Hubble scale during inflation should be much smaller than the modulus mass, which means in turn that this warping should be, that parameter delta should be much smaller than delta to the minus 2. And finally, we come to the point of the back reaction to the warp factor. So to realize this scenario of inflation, we need tension for the probe brain, which is much smaller than the tensions of the two background brains, which is what we have. However, we can check that the tension of the probe brain is much bigger, or much bigger, it's bigger than the difference of the two background brains. So you might worry that the, by adding this probe brain in the compactification, you may destabilize the warping that you need to have this slow roll. Okay. However, Lee and so Yomin and Lübeling found some static multi-brain solutions with all back reaction included. So these were exact solutions. And by considering such kind of multi-brain action, so for our setup, we could see that you could find situations where P3 does not change this difference of P1 minus P2. So the warping that, so this difference were important for the warping. This difference dictated the warping of the internal space, which in turn dictated the potential. So by doing this calculation, we found that indeed, this even though T3 is much bigger than the difference of these two background brains, the potential of the electron does not change. So, and this is true in the adiabatic approximation, of course, because we consider that the motion of this probe brain is slow enough that is it is a succession of static configurations.
Does that mean that you've actually repeated the inflationary calculation in this three brain model, including back reaction?
No, what
did
you okay, it was a succession of arguments. First of all, we consider this slightly non-conical brains.
Yes.
When we have non-conical brains, you have, I mean, there should be some induced lambda effect in your. Effective four-dimensional theory. So, and we related the solutions of these inflating solutions to solutions of static configurations. And then we used this static configuration calculation to this multi-brain static solution to check if T1 minus T2 is changed by the addition of T3. And so it is a two-step argument. You see that?
Is that the relevant thing to look at, though? Because the assertion you're making is that you've calculated reliably what the field profiles are as
yes.
a function of the T1 minus T2.
Yes.
Which you did, without the program.
Yes.
But you did it in the limit where T1 minus T2, which is the source of that warping, is smaller than tension of the brain that you're ignoring. And so the question that then would be...
No. Here...
Because that's your condition that T3 is bigger than T1 minus T2. Right?
Yes. So we took in this calculation here, a T3, which is indeed
so
bigger than...
What you're saying is you did some things which amounted to saying that you weren't changing the difference in tensions, but the issue is not that. The issue is... If you stick in this program now, and if you had included the back reaction,
yes,
would you disrupt the bulk solution? The perturbation you're putting into the bulk solution is bigger than the warping that you were driving inflation, because it's sourced now by T3, which is bigger than T1 times T2. And the question, short of actually using the real solution, how do you know that the disruption of the bulk solution hasn't destroyed your slow roll? right? That's
okay. Yes.
Because it's that condition T3 less is bigger than T1 minus T2 is coming from the slow roll condition, right? That's why you have to choose that.
Yes. Yes.
So that's for me is the stopping point for the propane thing. But so if you have a real solution with three frames with back reaction, all the better to just really use that solution explicitly. Because then you don't have to make an argument. You can just say, well, I just know what the solution is, and I can just ask.
The thing is that this solution is a static solution. So if you compute the brain effect reaction,
yeah,
it vanishes. So we have actually all the frames, the multiple frames, are all conical. So
yeah, but then that's the answer. So because the thing is that you can't calculate the dynamics necessarily, but you can calculate potential energy given that you've got static solutions. And what you're saying is that the potential energy is zero.
Potential energy, yeah, becomes zero. But what I want to say is that even for the static background, the additional brain doesn't influence on the tuning.
But I don't think you can tell because it sounds like one set of words to say around, you know, to string around what you're saying, I think, is that when you've actually the real solution and you found potential, you found that this thing you had kept precisely canceled the contribution of the brain that you didn't keep and gave you zero. And that was why your potential was zero.
Right. Yes.
Although I know
even though he has not shown this explicitly, there is additional brain.
Yeah.
Out of the third. So there are four
non
trivial brains in this multiple brain solution. So there should be a tuning between two additional brains. But there are two background brains which are located at the poles. So we don't need to tune. The tuning between the background brain tensions can be kept the same as before. But so what do you need? What you need now? You can separate a necessary tuning for T3 from the tuning for the background. That's the separate issues.
I guess I don't see that. It's somehow it would be more convincing if you just actually said, well, here's this configuration with back reaction in place. Just do the calculation with that.
Right.
But it sounds like it's a series of arguments which don't sound like they're directly addressing the problem. The problem was that you're neglecting something which is bigger than the thing that was driving inflation. No, basically the problem. So then I don't quite see why you're avoiding that in the end of your.
So I think the partial answer is if you take only the conical propane, then the back reaction to this propane will be captured by the local Lepsch angle around propane. But I think in that case, we couldn't generate fully effective cosmic constant because it is conical. So just it can deform interaction without generating. So now, I don't know the full answer, but maybe there's a situation where there exists the sitter, for the sitter solution with multiple claims. And maybe there is a counterpart of local Lepsch angle that cancels the back reaction of the program without affecting the tuning of the background. That was my choice, but I don't know if that's the we couldn't find actual distortions.
Yes, the idea is that you have the sort of T1 and T2 are non-conical brains, but T3 would be conical. And the argument goes that since T3 is conical, then it's the way it perturbs the geometry is by adding an extra deficit angle, and that's not the sort of thing that will be relevant for the what you're using.
I guess I don't understand why we don't know that. Because the thing is, the conical defect is all to do with what's happening very close to the brain, and you're saying you're not getting a singularity. But what you don't know is what the work factor is doing as you moved away, because you now no longer have an axis metric geometry, so now they move away from that brain, there's some sort of configuration. So I don't know how people know about.
So actually, I don't mind the configuration where, we assume that the background brains to be non-conical together. But still, we need to have a very small deviation from the conical.
Yeah.
But I think the when I introduce program, I assume that there is local deviation angle, but it doesn't generate the 4D background. So there should be also deviate from the conical brain. But this back reaction doesn't influence much the work vector at the position of the background. So yes.
But you know that, or you think that it might be true?
It might be true, but I don't have proof.
Yeah.
Okay. Like complete proof that taking into account inflating brains.
Yeah.
We don't have that. We have arguments. I mean, the first argument is that there exist solutions, static solutions. The flat brains, okay, these ones,
where the inclusion of a T3 with a tension bigger than the difference of the two background brains has not destabilized the work.
Then we use these solutions a step higher when we do this calculation of the non-conical brain, because we can relate non-conical inflating brain solutions, okay, to conical static brain solutions. So we can separate the solutions to a part which is the same as conical and flat plus some correction. Okay? So by using the previous argument, okay, we can see that this first part of the solution does not change. And then we show that the deviation of the conical flat brain does not also have a significant effect. But this second part of the argument is kind of okay, it's an approximation. It's not looking at something exact. Okay, the exact statement is that one, that if you have static conical brains, that you can cook up a multi-brain solution where the inclusion of a T3 and possibly you need actually more than one extra brains does not change the form, just the form of the background solution does not change the T1 minus T2, which regulates the work. That's the exact argument.
It gives me the willies because I've been burned by that kind of an argument before and kind of mentioned that it just seems how hard can inflation be to get. And if you're ever, the thing is, you're making things so small that if you ever neglect anything that's better than it, almost always it comes back and screws you. That you know, inflation. So it just makes me nervous. So
it's scalable.
Yeah, yeah. No, it'd be nice to be able to relax.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this brings me to my conclusion. I studied the machine two grade. For the inflation scenario, 60 case of gravity. We saw that inflation happens for weak warping, at least it can happen. It's possible, maybe other limits for strong warping, so possibly, but this happens for weak warping. This is something different from string models. The basic parameters of this inflation is that there are the numbers for these numbers for chromatification scale. Fundamental scale and the Hubble scale during inflation. So the Hubble scale, the scale of inflation should be about lower than 10 to the 20 GP.
Are they all set separately or do they come to you as a combination? Because you have one condition that is the amplitude is 10 minus 5. Do you have some sort of range you can play with?
Yeah, but small range. So it should be really about
10 to the 13. Could be. Than the 14 you wish, but if you push higher, so please. But not, they can't vary much.
But can vary a lot of the scale of inflation by playing with a. So
To control back reaction, we need very small warping.
Back reaction to the volume modules. So we should be close to the plus one solution. So this scenario could be falsified if tensor modes are detected, because we saw that R is proportional to this delta, so it should be always negligible. And finally, the angular motion, which I have not taken into account. So even if we don't get spiral motion of this probe brain in this compactification, we assume that this brain remains at a constant value of the angular coordinate theta. Then perturbations, when we discuss perturbations of this background, we find isokervature modes and also some non-Gaussian is something that has been studied in this paper here. So in principle, there could be the phenomenology of this model could be much based. Furthermore, something I have not included here in my conclusion is that for strong warping, could be possible that we have something like a DBI inflation in the relative visit limit, where you saturate the square root. And in that case, we might be able to get around all these back reaction issues for which we provide them, well, some, we believe, plausible arguments that they will not destabilize this weak world scenario. But we haven't really studied it yet. So, principally, there could exist some region of relativistic DBI inflation if we get strong warping. So, in the strong world background, strongly warped background. But this is something.